Outdoor Edge knows that providing a freezer full of meat is part of the reason we all hunt. And what better way to bring it full circle than to process your own wild game? Outdoor Edge provides a full lineup of traditional and replaceable blade hunting knives and complete wild game processing kits to bring your wild game from the field to the freezer. Visit OutdoorEdge.com and at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30 for 30% off.
You're listening to the Average Conservationist podcast, brought to you in partner with 2% for Conservation. 2% for Conservation's mission is to create an alliance of businesses and individuals that ensure the future of hunting and angling by committing their time and dollars to fish and wildlife. 1% of your time plus 1% of your money equals 2% for Conservation. 2% helps businesses and people pair with conservation causes to support things that fit what they care about. Whether you're into fishing, hunting, or just getting outdoors, 2% can help you not only start giving back to wildlife, but get certified for it. Getting 2% certified means you've made the same commitment as popular brands like Sitka, Stone Glacier, and Seek Outside in giving at least 1% of your time and dollars back to wildlife. But it's not just for outdoor companies. Breweries, contractors, coffee roasters, and even piano repair companies have earned 2% certification and stand out as leaders in their community for doing so. Businesses that are committed to conservation deserve your business when you shop. Learn more about 2% for Conservation at fishandwildlife.org. That's fishandwildlife.org. Good morning, everyone. I hope that you had a happy Easter and you got to spend some time with friends and family and that your week is off to a good start here as well. This is the Average Conservationist podcast, and I'm your host, Marcus Ewing. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Lindsay Kochka, and Lindsay is the owner and founder of 2% Certified Fluent Movement on the Fly. And what Fluent Movement on the Fly is it's a methodology, really, where Lindsay utilizes a lot of her education in yoga, natural movement, functional range, conditioning mobility specialist, and ties those into her experience as a fly fishing guide and her experience with fly fishing. And what she found as she kind of set into her journey of fly fishing were a lot of the similarities between fly fishing and the things that she was working on from a wellness side of things as well. And as well as the more she got into fly fishing in general, the more and she started to talk to people, the more she realized that a lot of people and maybe a bit more women specifically were a little, what's the word I'm looking for? A little nervous, apprehensive about some of the obstacles that they faced when they were, maybe exploring some new areas on the water, on the river, and just didn't feel quite comfortable kind of navigating some of the terrain that was out there. So with Lindsay's course, she's basically empowering women to feel more comfortable while they're on the water, while they're in the field, and give them that confidence to, you know, be able to get past that tree that's across the river, or, you know, be able to wade through some, faster water than maybe what they're used to. And really, kind of all in all, trying to lower or get rid of one of the barriers to entry for fly fishing, which I think is just is great, because it's oftentimes, and Lindsay and I talk about this, it's one of those things that you don't really think about, especially if you kind of get into fly fishing at a younger age. You just kind of take it for granted that you can get over that tree or get through that fast water, scale those rocks or walking on, some slippery terrain for the first time in some faster water. And, with Lindsay's background and training in some of the things that I had mentioned, she's using that again to help anglers feel more comfortable when they're out there and really connect, with nature and with their surroundings when they're out on the water too, which I think is just an awesome and fascinating approach to it as well, because I think too often we get kind of caught up in the, you know, the hustle and bustle of life. And even when we're out enjoying, you know, whether it's hunting or fishing or backpacking or, you know, bird watching, whatever it is, we don't sometimes take the time to slow down and to really appreciate and enjoy the things that are around us. And that's, you know, certainly one of the things that she wants to emphasize is, you know, finding that, you know, that peaceful, that kind of zen-like state when you're on the water, as well as, you know, kind of in your own personal life as well. So episode 98, Lindsay Kochka, enjoy. Today's episode is going to be brought to you by my friends at Wild Rivers Coffee. Sammy and Marshall, for the last few years, have been turning out some awesome coffee. We just wrapped up an Easter giveaway where they gave away one of their French presses and a bag of their coffee. You know, Wild Rivers Coffee, they're roasting in small batches so that they can ensure that your coffee arrives at its peak freshness. Wild Rivers is also a proud partner with 2% for Conservation. That's why everything that they sell, a portion of the proceeds are being donated back to wildlife conservations that are near and dear to them. You're going to have groups like Trout Unlimited, Backcountry Hunters and Angler, Ducks Unlimited, and Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. So head over to wildriverscoffeeco.com. Get your fresh roasted beans. They have some really sweet handmade mugs, ton of cool merch, and as I just mentioned, a ton of accessories for, you know, pour over, French press, grinding your beans, all that good stuff. They've got it there. It's really a one-stop shop for all your coffee needs. Use the code, and this is all caps, fish_wildlife, and you're going to save 15% off your order. Or if you sign up today and subscribe for your coffee, you're going to save 10% off your order as well. So again, head over to wildriverscoffeeco.com.
Basically, at the onset of the pandemic, at the time I was the director of programming, yoga and fitness programming for a group of climbing gyms in the Twin Cities. And of course, that was kind of the first thing to go when COVID came around. So I was laid off pretty quickly. And my partner and I were doing like long distance in between Minnesota and Montana for some time prior. And I kind of just not knowing what this pandemic business was all about, I just kind of packed up my truck and cruised out west, and I haven't left. So I've been here for just a little over 2 years. So I'm pretty new to the West yet.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, if you're going to do it, I mean, it's super unfortunate that you know, you lost your job during the pandemic, which, you know, unfortunately so many people did. But to kind of have somewhere to go, I guess, to some degree, with your partner living in Montana, I mean, you had a bit of a destination. I mean, but what a great time to do it, right? Where we can't really be inside, but, you know, Montana, Bozeman in particular, with everything that the outdoors has to offer and that, you know, in the kind of the Gallatin Valley there. I mean, it's what a place to go, right?
Oh, I mean, truly ideal. I don't want to, you know, count the pandemic as a blessing necessarily, but in terms of places to wind up, I mean, I struggled a little bit to find work right when I got out here. You know, we were all kind of in lockdown for a little bit of time. And then, of course, a lot of my history has been hospitality industry, outdoor apparel, and then, of course, teaching yoga and fitness, all of which weren't really considered essential and up and running. So I definitely had a few months just to fish every single day and learn the fisheries, learn the area, learn the culture. So as much as it was kind of a predominantly a solo venture, a lot of alone time fishing and, you know, learning how to be safe in a new environment where there's different degrees of wildlife hanging around, it kind of fast-tracked my understanding of just the region because of the pandemic. And, you know, I eventually got a job on a farm for a while and figured out how to make do for a while before reorienting into what I'm up to now. So yeah, I'm not mad about it. I love Bozeman. I mean, it's been pretty sweet being out here.
Yeah. So let's talk about what you're up to now. Fluent Movement on the Fly. Obviously you were just announced, I think maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks ago, as being 2% certified. So tell me about Fluent Movement on the Fly.
Yeah. So it's a vision that began a few years ago. And really, I think it budded right when I started fly fishing. So I've been fly fishing for about 7-8 years. So not too terribly long, but right when I started fly fishing and I began exploring while living in Minnesota and in the Driftless region, kind of right out of the gate, I realized that there were all sorts of challenges that I was running up against that I didn't necessarily expect. So, you know, I lived in Minneapolis for about 20 years, and, you know, much of the terrain there, it's just like manicured, even when you're kind of like getting out into the quote unquote outdoors. Most of the stuff close to the city is pretty accessible and approachable and easy to navigate. When I started fly fishing and I started exploring these small spring creeks, I recognized that I was like, wow, this is actually really hard. I'm like moving through really thick brush, and I'm learning how to navigate moving water and wade effectively, and learning about how to get up and over obstacles and underneath stuff. And, you know, just all those components that I hadn't really experienced in terms of moving in the outdoors around Minneapolis in particular. So, you know, being a yoga teacher and then also a natural movement educator, I sort of just made the connection right away that, like, huh, I wonder if other people are experiencing what I'm experiencing as I'm starting to learn how to fly fish and learn how to move through this kind of terrain. So I started getting a little bit more involved in the fly fishing community, different organizations, different groups, and just chatting with people about their experiences and on the water and boats. Just different club meetings. And lo and behold, I was hearing from a lot of people that they were like, you know, I'm actually not terribly comfortable going out fly fishing, and certainly not alone because of some of these additional physical challenges that I'm experiencing. So that's kind of where the idea was born out of, was just talking to lots of different folks about some of these different more physical focused elements of the fishing itself. So beyond, you know, all of the resources that we have available to learn how to cast and to learn entomology and reading water and all of that, I was noticing that there really wasn't anyone speaking specifically to this other component that actually really kind of makes or breaks our experience. So that's kind of where it came from.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, when I was looking through the website, through your website there, and getting a better understanding of what it is that the business does and what you offer. Like, and I start to think back on some of my experiences, especially like you said, early on with fly fishing. And I don't know if it's maybe exclusive a bit more to like the Midwest and the East, where, I mean, there's certainly a lot of streams and rivers and things like that in the West that are, you know, a bit more difficult to access. You know, they have a lot more of the logs and trees, but I feel like a lot of people, when they think of like fly fishing in the West, you're like, oh, you're standing in like an open meadow and it's beautiful and it's like super easy to just walk there, right? But that's certainly not the case, right? And there's so many different areas to fly fish, and not necessarily just for trout. I mean, you can fish all sorts of species with fly fishing. And then that element of, you know, walking over all of these downed trees, ducking underneath them. And at the time I kind of took it for granted, right? Cause I was younger and it was like, oh, it's just, you know, beep bop over this and no big deal. But yeah, as I get older, I'm like, oh gosh, another downed tree. Like, all right, here we go. Like, hike up the waders a little bit, like get comfortable, because you're going to be stretching here and, you know, kind of, you know, maneuver your way around stuff. And it takes its toll on you. It really does.
Yeah, totally. And I think that you nailed it. It's like, it's one of those things that I think a lot of people take for granted if it just happens to feel intuitive and really easy. So for sure, there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, what's the big deal about getting up and over this downed tree? But that's certainly not everyone. I mean, there's a lot of folks, and again, our bodies change over time. But even people that are still within that younger demographic, you know, if they didn't grow up in these environments and they haven't really been exposed to them, it isn't actually that intuitive to all people. So really just offering super simple methods that people can use, where it's like, once you start doing it, you're like, oh, this clicks, this feels natural. But for some people, a little bit of education goes a super long way. And then of course, again, things change with our bodies all the time. So being able to have a kind of arsenal of different methods available so that we feel a little bit more empowered and like we have more options to continue to explore, I think is super important. And plus, you know, the water of the West, it's all over the place. But, you know, when I got out here, when I went to guide school, it was predominantly for two reasons, because I was taking on a pretty big volunteer role in the fly fishing community, and I wanted to learn more so about the water in the area. But also because I'd never been exposed really to the bigger water, and I found that to be super intimidating. Just, you know, it's much faster. It's arguably more dangerous in many ways. So I think that there are challenges in any kind of fishery and any kind of water available, for sure.
Yeah, the like you said, the bigger water, yeah, it can certainly be intimidating. Whether it's just, I mean, you look at some of these big streams, and yeah, I mean, the water can get super dicey if you're not prepared, if you're not, you know, watching where you're stepping, if you just, you know, if you just take for granted, like, oh, this next step without looking down is no big deal, right? It's just like where I'm standing now, and maybe there's a big rock and you trip and then you go down and then your waders fill up. I mean, even if you're only in, you know, 2 feet of water, like, it's going to ruin your day, you know? And you could, I mean, the list of things that could go wrong from that point is really big, and you don't want to really mess with any of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's not like I'm trying to pretend like this is like a number one safety method, and like you learn these things and then you're just going to be good to go. But I do think you're right, that mindfulness component of just reminding people, and, you know, especially in the culture that we live in, where it's like everything's moving so fast and we're kind of programmed to move in a really quick way, reminding people and helping people to remember how to slow down and to be really methodical and mindful with each individual step when you're crossing a river, that's huge. I mean, I feel like every time I've taken a digger, it's because I've been moving too fast, without question. And I mean, hey, it still happens.
You know, and how many people are out fishing, and maybe they're very early on in their fly fishing journey, and they're fishing, you know, some kind of close quarters waters with a lot of overhang and debris and whatnot, and they come across a downed tree and they don't feel comfortable to be able to get past it. So that's kind of where their day ends, right? Or they just, you know, they fish back upstream or downstream, whichever way they came from, and, you know, they're fishing the same water that they probably already buggered up from coming through in the first place. And if you have that confidence and that strength and that, you know, empowerment, like you talked about, to be like, okay, I know what I can do to help me get over this. You know, I've done this before, like through one of your retreats, or, you know, they have a better understanding of what it takes to get over that. And then their day continues, right? And they're getting now to fish potentially water that they haven't fished before. And it really enhances their experience all the way around.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, how many times have you just been stuck fishing the same run or the same hole because you're like, this is where I am. I can't get past whatever it happens to be. So I guess I'm just going to hammer this one section and wonder why I'm not catching fish anymore 3 hours later.
Yeah.
So totally agree. And then on the inverse, you know, reminding people to make really calculated choices as well. So that, like, sometimes there are situations where it's like you kind of weigh out, is it worth me crossing this down tree across the river in order to get to the other bank so that I can fish it because it looks really, really good? Or is that maybe not that wise of a choice, and perhaps I can take a different route and do something differently? So I think both are true, for sure.
Yeah, I had a funny story about when I was, my family and I took a trip up to, we were up by Helena, and this is probably 15 years ago. We went out fly fishing for the summer, and we were fishing this small tributary to the Blackfoot, and I had a buddy with me, and we're just out of high school, just into college, and him and I were fishing this stretch, and my dad had went off and was either, I think, went way upstream of us and was like, I'll just come down and meet you guys in a couple hours. So he eventually works his way back down, and we're fishing this little stretch of water kind of running through this meadow that's, maybe 15 yards across. Like, it's not very big, but it's fairly deep, right? And, you know, my dad and I are sitting there talking. My buddy's upstream of us, and, you know, he's got 40 feet of line out, right? Like, entirely too much line, and he's standing in the water. Entirely too much line out, and, like, my dad and I are just kind of watching him, just, like, you know, false cast, false cast, false cast. We're like, what is this guy doing, right? And then next thing you know, you see him, you know, he's jerking on the rod because, of course, he casted across the stream and got hung up. So he's like inching further and further out to like see if he can, you know, just wiggle his fly free. And my dad and I look back down, and like 30 seconds later, we look up, and all we see is just a head, a hat, and sunglasses just like floating down the river at us. Like he fell, filled everything up, and was just like along for the ride on the river. And it was one of the funniest things that I've ever seen. And, you know, thankfully, he didn't get hurt. He just, you know, it was too deep and he lost his footing, and he wasn't a super coordinated guy to begin with. And yeah, it's one of the things that I think about whenever I think about falling or something treacherous when fly fishing.
Oh, it happened. And you know, it happens to the best of us. It happens to all of us. So again, it's not that we're going to assume like, okay, you're never going to fall. But you know, half of what we do with the fluent movement on the fly classes is like incorporating get up patterns, like literally, because you are going to fall. How are the most effective ways for you to get up if you're on your back or you're on your front body or whatever the environment and the circumstances are? Because yeah, you're going to have to figure out how to get up. And again, for some people, it's just intuitive. And then other times you get yourself in a weird situation. And having some of that muscle memory just in place where it just clicks in is super helpful for sure.
So how did the wellness side, how did you get involved in that? I mean, you said, you know, you were, you're certified in a ton of different things, whether it's, I'm not even going to try to list all of them, but I know like yoga and movement and mobility, those are certainly some. How did you kind of get involved in the wellness side of things?
Well, so I've been teaching for just over a decade, and I started out in the yoga industry. So I began practicing yoga about a dozen years ago and pretty quickly recognized that it was just a very impactful practice for me in terms of mental health, physical health, just and even the community aspect. So I decided to do my first teacher training 10 years ago. And then beyond that, you know, I've been teaching on and off full-time and part-time and with other part-time jobs sprinkled in for the past 10 years. And really just recognizing that it's helpful for so many people for so many different reasons. I mean, people come to yoga practice, mindfulness practices, all the different kind of variants for their own personal reasons. But, you know, we know that even like doctors are very regularly prescribing yoga or meditation or mindfulness practice. And of course we live in a sedentary culture overall. So Yes. Just getting people moving is huge for mental health and for physical health and all of it. So it's definitely something I've just been passionate about for a really long time for all the reasons that I listed, and starting to branch out and getting certified in MoveNat, which is the natural movement, which really focuses on basic human movement, more so in the outdoors. I mean, you could think of it more as like primal movement or functional movement, stuff like stepping up and over stuff or throwing and catching or balancing or running or swimming, all of that. And then, of course, joint longevity. So the functional range conditioning is so helpful for, and I mean, it's really used a lot in professional athletics, but so useful for people who really anyone, but certainly people that are really invested in a specific sport or a hobby or a thing where sometimes it involves repetitive motion. Fly fishing is a great example of that. Rowing is a great example of that. You know, there's tons of different options. But yeah, it's been really cool to just expand my education and my offerings and kind of evolve over the years based upon where my values lie and what I feel like is useful and applicable in my life and in the people that I've been teaching.
Yeah. Now, were you an athlete growing up? Did you play a lot of different sports?
No, not at all. Nerd. Total, like, hanging out. I mean, I dabbled. I, like, very, very casually dabbled. But no, you know, I've always been a cyclist. And, you know, in my early 20s, I was a bike messenger for several years. So I've always, you know, been a person who likes to be outside, but definitely not like a devout athlete in any certain way. I'm honestly just, I don't have a competitive bone in my body. So it never really worked. I tried a couple bike races, and I was like, yeah, this is just stressful, actually.
No, and that's all right. And the reason I asked was because what I find a lot of times of people who, you know, make fitness, you know, or just wellness kind of in general as a part of their life. Usually it's because something piqued their interest maybe at a younger age during athletics. I told a story the other day, I think on the podcast, where I had broke my ankle at I was like 13, 14 years old, something like that, playing like peewee football. And the whole like rehabilitation process was super interesting to me. So I'm like, I'm going to be a physical therapist. Like, that's what I want to do. Even when, like, and this was through high school, I kind of had this game plan. And then I got to college and I had met with an academic advisor and he was like, okay, like, this is what you want to do. Like, this is what you got. I was like, 6 years. It's like, are you kidding me? No. Let's talk about something else here, right? Like, I quickly threw that out the window, but I always kind of curious if there was something like at a younger age that just kind of like, you know, again, piqued your interest, for the wellness and, that side of things.
Yeah, no, not so much, but you know, it was kind of my transition from, bike messenger life into teaching yoga. Was, you know, I've always loved to move my body. I've always loved to be outside in some capacity. But yeah, never super serious about it. Just part of kind of my lifestyle overall, I'd say.
Yeah. And the fly fishing side of things, you said you started that about 8 years ago. What was it that got you into it?
You know, I swear it must have been a river runs through it. I feel like somewhere along the line, I had this idea of this like meditative quality of fly casting, which like everyone's seen the movie and everyone knows, and it's so beautiful. And we also all know that it's not necessarily representative of what any particular day looks like.
No, not overall. At all.
But yeah, I don't know exactly what it was, but I was really just interested in learning. And yeah, so that's where it began. And from there, it was really casual to begin with. And, you know, honestly, Emma, as much as I've, you know, I've been a teacher for a long time and I've worked in a lot of kind of more extroverted environments, I'm a bit of an introvert. So I'm always like looking for different outlets and stuff that I can do solo if I want to. And then, of course, if you can also incorporate community, that's cool, too. But I kind of knew, like, this seems like my ticket to, like, where I can go and explore on my own and feel comfortable doing that. So that's definitely a component of why I was attracted to fly fishing in particular. And then that easy transition of a kind of like a mindfulness practice. And that clicked right away, too, where I was like, oh, this actually feels like a yoga practice. It's like it has the same essence when I'm out here in these beautiful places that are quiet. And, you know, again, it kind of depends, depends where you're fishing and where you are. They aren't all so terribly quiet these days, but yeah, at the time it just felt, it felt really, for lack of a better term, pretty nourishing on a base level. So.
Well, yeah. And, you know, when you kind of compared it to yoga to a degree there, like, you know, with yoga, obviously you're changing poses and, you know, I'll say right off the bat, my yoga experience is very limited. I'm a terribly unflexible person. And the couple times I've done yoga, I'm like, this is so painful. I certainly see the benefits and I know why it's beneficial for people doing it and why they enjoy it. I'm like, but it's just, I need to take a more serious approach to it because, like I said, I know how good it can be for the body and the mind and all of that. But you know, with kind of the transitioning from different poses and whatnot, I mean, that's kind of the same thing with fly fishing, right? Like maybe you're just making your regular cast or now you're roll casting or things like that. And, you know, with mending the line or, you know, if like we talked about a little earlier, if you're streamer fishing, like there's kind of like one base movement and then a bunch of things that kind of work off of that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, ultimately first and foremost, the mind-body connection is more than anything else, right? So like you get into this state of embodiment where you're actually like, you know, again, we live in this culture where we're really busy and distracted and there's like constant stimulation and information coming in and output as well. We feel like we need to be doing stuff all the time. And getting into that mode of like actually inhabiting our bodies, because we really have to when we're fly fishing, like we're really in tune with ourselves as well as our environment. At the end of the day, I feel like that is what's most sort of similar between yoga practice and fly fishing is, yes, the movements, but also just the connection overall.
Yeah, and I'm never more focused than when you make that perfect cast in the perfect run and you get the perfect drift. Like the you could almost like pick out details on the fly, right? Because you're watching it so intently and you're just, you know, waiting for that fish to rise. So yeah, there's certainly something about, yeah, both practices where you're just able to get to a level of focus that you just don't get to, you know, regularly on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, you get into the zone.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's awesome.
The zone. So tell me about, you know, some of the retreats. I know you said you were working on like scheduling them for the spring and into the summer here. So what takes place during one of your retreats? Is it multiple days, single day? How does it work?
Both. So I threw Fluent Movement on the Fly, and that's predominantly been online classes. And I've kind of been just working on refining how I want to continue to present it to the world. I've done some in-person classes with Fluent Movement on the Fly as well, but I thought it would be neat to start creating some retreats that basically encompass a whole bunch of this stuff together. So I've been doing some day retreats as well as weekend retreats to begin. And as of now, the weight and wellness retreats have been women specific for a couple reasons. For one reason, it's just a little bit easier to organize with like lodging and sleeping quarters.
Sure.
But also, you know, I think it's just important to create that communal space for women to come together and learn from one another. So creating a woman-led space is important. So it's been cool to do that. I do hope to branch out and do some more offerings that aren't necessarily gender exclusive. But for the time being, the weight and wellness, fly fishing and wellness retreats are women-focused retreats, and they're really cool. So the idea is, and you know, it's kind of speaking to a couple different issues that I started locating in the industry of fly fishing as well as yoga and wellness and all of that. And that being that it was kind of financially inaccessible for a lot of people. You know, guide hosted trips, which are great and they're really their own specific thing, tend to have a pretty high price point because they're guided and you have to pay your guides. And you know, really with yoga retreats, they tend to usually have a pretty high price point because they're really heavy in the education. So you have to pay your teachers. So what I wanted to do is create an environment with these retreats where we could take the guide component out because that tends to be the most expensive part and make them self-guided. And then also create an environment that was more welcome toward all levels of anglers. So whether or not they were, or attendees are brand new anglers, or it's folks that have been fishing forever, I wanted to see if we could create a space that was open and welcoming for everybody.
What, you know, like throughout the course of whether it's a single day retreat or a weekend retreat, what is one of the big things that you're hoping that, you know, the women will take away from this, you know, when they go home and they're back fishing on their own or just in general?
You know, a few different things. So one of the missions with the retreats is to help people to kind of recognize that it's totally fine to approach fly fishing in your own way. And, you know, so the structure of the retreats is a little bit loose in that, you know, some guide hosted trips or even yoga retreats, it's like a really rigid schedule and you're kind of just trying to pack as much in as you can and get as much time in the water as you can. And these retreats, it's a little bit more of a choose your own adventure kind of approach. So whether or not people want to fish hard from dawn until dusk, they can. For those who want to just fish for maybe 3-4 hours and they want to go hang out at wherever we're staying and, you know, go to the hot springs or read a book or whatever, they can do that too. So that's one thing that I think is important in terms of the wellness component is actually people just feeling empowered to take care of themselves in their own kind of individual way. But then on top of that, people also taking ownership over their own path in terms of fly fishing and education. You know, we all learn really differently and that's good. So people can come to a retreat and decide whether or not they're like, okay, I actually want to hire a guide and go on a guide trip so that I can really deep dive and again, kind of like fast track my education through that avenue. Or there's other people who would rather kind of take the DIY approach and maybe let their learning be a little bit more of a slower process. So helping people to kind of uncover what their goals are and how they want to approach it as individuals, I think, is really important. And then on top of everything else, the conservation component, I think, is huge. So all of our fly fishing retreats, we're hoping to integrate some different organizations to come and offer just some really basic presentations and talks about what it is that they do, and then also incorporating elements of just general outdoor stewardship and education, because there's so many new anglers, and it's great that so many people are becoming exposed and excited about the sport. But, you know, I know for myself, I didn't know a thing about, say, fish handling or, you know, spawning grounds and reds for years. You know, I was just never exposed to it until I started getting involved with organizations like Trout Unlimited. So incorporating that into the experience of the retreat, so that no matter where people are in their fly fishing journey, they leave with those like really integral pieces of education. So at least people know, like, hey, don't tread on reds. Even though you're brand new to fishing, now you know that this is a thing. And, you know, hey, keep your fish wet. Wet your hands when you're handling a fish.
Yeah, and I think those practices and principles that you just mentioned there, you know, are so important, right? Because a lot of times, or at least in my experience, when I encounter someone who's new to fishing or to hunting, you know, the conservation aspect of, you know, the outdoors in general, they just don't know any better. They don't know what they don't know, right? And it's no, exactly, you know, slight to them. It's likely a piece of the puzzle that they just haven't experienced or haven't you know, learned much about, and that's okay, because it gives you know, people like you and I and other anglers, you know, opportunities to educate them. And I think introducing those at an early point in their journey with you know, in this particular case, fly fishing, is huge, right? Because it gives them a much better understanding of, you know, not just you know, the fish in the water, but, you know, the bugs, but the, you know, the area, you know, around the streams or the rivers or anything like that, and how that ecosystem affects the fish. And, you know, I mean, that may be getting a bit deeper in than, you know, a kind of an entry level conservation talk, but, you know, they just build this much better understanding, which is going to make them a much better angler too. When you have when you know more about, you know, not only the fish, but the surrounding areas and how they all are intertwined and work together.
Yeah, no, totally. That's a really good point too, is the fact that, like, yes, as you do actually gain this conservation knowledge, you are going to become a better angler. And, you know, you can't really blame anyone for, like, right when they're starting. Of course, like, the goal is, okay, I need to figure out how to cast well, and I need to figure out how to choose my flies and all of that. But at the end of the day, that both support one another. So there's a symbiotic relationship between understanding conservation and the environment that you're in, and understanding how to fly fish. So, and I mean, plus stream etiquette. Like, right. I wish there was, like, why doesn't anyone talk about stream etiquette more? Because that's the other thing, is like, as again, the sport is growing, and, you know, there's some bitterness that you experience from time to time with that. It's like, you know, a lot of that is just stemmed from people, again, just not knowing what they don't know. And I know for a fact that I spent years having no clue that I was probably just infuriating so many anglers that I was just tromping right past, right up, you know, because I just had no idea. So yeah, I think that all of that combined, those pieces of information and education are huge, so that everyone can have a really good time while they're fishing, and then also be having a positive impact on the environment as a whole and the sport as a whole.
Yeah, I could not agree more. So for you, Lindsay, what would you say is the most rewarding thing that you take out of these retreats and the interactions with people that you have, whether it's, you know, on the wellness side or just the, you know, helping introduce, you know, people to fly fishing?
You know, I think it's more than anything else, it really is the amount of community that's being built. And again, you know, it's kind of funny, because I started fly fishing, and it was really just like me fishing alone for several years. For the most part, I never really imagined that I was going to morph my my kind of relationship with fly fishing into something that was so community centric. But it's been really cool to watch people forge all these new friendships. And I mean, that's the other thing, is like all of this learning really can happen in more of like these more organic situations where you're just like hanging out with your buddy and you happen to learn something new. So yes, the learning, but also just people having the opportunity to connect with one another is awesome. I mean, that's what drew me to, you know, to teaching yoga and to teaching natural movement. And that's kind of what's been keeping me interested in pursuing this, just people getting to become more connected with one another.
Yeah. What's been the most difficult part of it?
Oh, geez. just in general, figuring out how to run a small business is hilarious. And, you know, much of that is just so much trial and error. So I think just offering myself truthfully a lot of grace and recognizing that, like, yeah, I'm getting survey feedback, and like, it's not always going to be the most positive. Like, everyone has different needs and different wants and different expectations. So, you know, being able to gracefully accept feedback and critique here and there is, you know, it's hard, but it's important. And I think it's really, really useful. But yeah, I mean, you know, small business, it's just like a never ending learning curve.
It really is. Yeah, it absolutely is. Like, even when you think you kind of have a grasp on it, something crops up and you're like, huh, haven't dealt with that one before, right? And then you got to kind of reassess almost everything that you've done up to that point, because it's all led you to where you're at. So yeah, no, it's definitely an evolution as time goes on.
Yeah. Hello, tax season.
Yeah. The worst time of year for a small business.
Totally.
So kind of sticking with the conservation side of things, how was it that you, you know, learned about 2% for conservation?
You know, so one of the values and goals with Float Moon on the Fly and the Wayne Wellness Retreats is really honing in on partnering with local businesses to the best of my ability. So I've been spending plenty of time just researching all the different small businesses and entrepreneurs, both in Montana and Minnesota. So I run retreats both in Montana and Minnesota. And I happened upon Shannon Waters over at Gastronome.
Oh, she's
somewhere
the best.
Along the line. I know. Yeah. So I connected with her and was like, oh, this is exactly what I need, first of all, for these retreats. Like, and you know, I'm also guiding now too. So I'm like, your food is perfect because it's so good and it's so easy to prepare. I mean, it's crazy good. So I connected with her about purchasing Gastronome for all the retreats. You know, it's a really cool way to expose all the attendees to a Gastronome and these meals so that they can, you know, they can use them when they're fly fishing or doing whatever they're doing in the backcountry. So I actually found out about 2% through Shannon after just spending some time on the website and kind of digging in. I was like, oh, what's this all about? So I'd never actually even heard of it until I came upon Gastronome and was like, oh, this is awesome. I should definitely do this. So, which is perfect. I mean, that's like exactly how it's designed to work, right? Is like, you see this badge and you're like, oh, my interest is piqued.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's how I learned about 2%. And it's been so cool to start digging into all the different businesses who are certified and invested in this.
Yeah, it's a very diverse list, which is one of the things that I've talked about in the past and that I really love about 2% is, you know, a lot of people when they hear wildlife conservation, you know, they're just assuming that the brand or the business, whatever, is somehow affiliated with the outdoors to some degree, whether it's a service or a product that you're offering, but it's going to be related. And that's just not the case with 2%. You know, what they're doing is trying to find, again, businesses and individuals who, regardless of what they're doing, you know, put an emphasis on the wildlife and giving back. And it comes in all shapes and sizes. And that's their, you know, the logo is purple for a reason, right? And that's just one of the many things that I love about 2%.
Yeah, well, and it's approachable, right? And,
very.
And that's kind of the goal with like incorporating some of the conservation education into what I'm doing with the retreats is like, how can we actually make this approachable and digestible and accessible? Because, you know, sometimes the stuff gets really heady and overwhelming and people are like kind of get lost. I love the way that 2% really clearly communicates conservation.
Yeah. And, you know, when I get the chance to speak to businesses or people that are from kind of Bozeman or kind of the greater Bozeman area there, I always just assume that it's like, oh, yeah, I know Jared. Because Jared feels like the mayor of Bozeman, and at least when it comes to like the outdoor community, right? He just has you know, so many friends and connections, and, you know, through businesses and everything like that. That I just assume like, oh, it's yeah, Jared just knew him and talked to him about it, and they, you know, decide to come on. But yeah, to hear you know, that you found 2% through another 2% business, yeah, it's super cool. And yeah, I can't echo what you said enough about Gastronome and their meals, because it does not taste like it should be coming out of a bag. It's that good.
Oh, I know. It's crazy.
So what are some of the organizations that you're working with there?
That was a project in and of itself. I'm just like, there are just endless amazing organizations. And not that you can't work with many, 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 but I did think that it was important to kind of hone in. So American Rivers, I'm a river ambassador with them, and hoping to also organize some Fluent Movement on the Fly events with them that are also river cleanups. And Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Wild Montana as well. And then also United Women on the Fly.
So why those ones? I mean, you kind of touched on it. You know, you said you were the ambassador, but, you know, what was it about the other organizations that made you decide to want to get back and get involved with them?
I think that all those organizations individually and then also collectively do a really good job of looking at the conservation as a whole. So rather than just simply honing in on one like little narrow area, I feel like they do a great job of looking at the relationships between all of it. So yes, the rivers, yes, the lands, and then also the people. I don't know. United Women on the Fly is, I've been involved with them for quite a few years, and they're a little bit more more specific to creating access to marginalized communities. Also certainly doing conservation work and advocates for Keep Fish Wet. But, you know, part of the work that I'm doing is really hoping to create these community events and opportunities that are a little bit more accessible to a wider range of people. And I think that United Women on the Fly has been a huge contributing factor in kind of building my philosophy behind that. So they're the best. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, you know, of course, are amazing. And I like that they are equally focused on hunting community as well as fishing community. And then, of course, American Rivers are doing so much important work in fishery work in particular, and climate change work in particular, and same with Wild Montana. So I'm really impressed with all of them.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I like that you took the approach of wanting to kind of, you know, hone, you know, your search for the right organizations and picking the organizations that, you know, not only have, you know, affected you, you know, from a personal standpoint, but that align with, you know, what your business is doing and how it all kind of intertwines together. I think that that's super important, because it definitely helps keep you accountable for giving back and for getting involved when the mission is so kind of near and dear to not only what you believe, but what, you know, your business stands for and everything as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
So we're kind of, you know, in, we'll say early spring, right? It's mid-April. Yeah, mid-April. Do you have like any big fly trips or anything this year planned? Or is it going to be this summer just kind of focused on the guiding and the weight and wellness retreats?
Yeah, you know, I don't have anything huge on the agenda for myself quite yet. That could change, but I did just head out to Pyramid Lake with the United Women on the Fly leadership team a few weeks ago now. And that was, I mean, that was so cool that it'll probably keep me motivated and moving and just head down working for the next couple of months anyway. But yeah, I'm going to be pinging back and forth between Montana and Minnesota, which is super fun. So heading up retreats here and retreats there, doing some guiding in both areas. And I think that's kind of going to be it. I mean, the coolest thing about living in Montana is, like, I'm not terribly inclined to feel like I need to take a trip anywhere else. Like, there's just endless spots that I haven't yet seen, and there's just so much to explore here that I couldn't be happier to just be spending my time right here in Montana and some time in Minnesota as well.
Yeah, two places that are tough to beat. That's kind of one of the questions that I always ask people is, like, you know, do you have anything big planned, you know, whether it's a hunting trip, a fishing trip, backpacking trip, whatever the case may be. And I find more times than not, when I'm speaking to someone from Montana, they're like, no, I'm probably just going to, you know, hunt my normal unit this year, you know, my normal tag, because, you know, I live in Montana and things are pretty good out here, right? Like, I don't need to go anywhere else.
Yeah. I feel pretty fortunate to feel like I don't need to, like, really take much of a vacation from just my regular life. So it's pretty cool though.
Yeah,
I do love Idaho, so I always make my way to Idaho to fish over there.
Well, unfortunately, it's not, you know, it's an easy drive, right, from where at. Yeah, it's not difficult to get to.
Totally. I mean, just an easy little long weekend even.
Yeah. So as a guide and, you know, someone who's been fly fishing, what's your favorite, I guess, fish to catch on the fly, and then your favorite method for fly fishing? I mean, in terms of, like, dries or streamers or nymphs, you know, what is, if you could choose one thing to have to do the rest of your life in terms of fly fishing, what would it be?
Oh, always hard. If you want to catch a million whitefish in a very short period of time, nymphing is always the game. You know, but I don't love nymphing, to be totally honest. I'll do it if I must, but love streamer fishing. I think I love streamer fishing particularly because it feels a little bit more engaged, you know, versus just kind of watching a bobber or watching a dry fly. I mean, of course, dry fly fishing is amazing, but I like the engagement of streamer fishing. I love the connection. I love the eat on a streamer. It's just super impactful and fun. So it's got to be streamer fishing. And the cool thing about streamer fishing is that it's really translatable to tons of different fish and fisheries. So, you know, whether or not it's cold water fisheries or warm water fisheries, usually streamer fishing can get you there. So it's kind of nice to be able to, you know, use the same tools and the same gear in more of a versatile way. It's easier on the pocketbook, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah, because fly fishing in general can get expensive super fast. It's a very expensive hobby. But yeah, it's one that I personally wouldn't trade for anything.
Same here. And it's great, and you know, it's only expensive as you want it to be. That's the thing too, is like you can invest over time, or if you've got a bunch of money to burn, you can go all in. And you know, I had one 5-weight for 4 years, and it was a pretty cheap little rig, and it suited me just fine. So it's been fun to expand, but it's you know, it's kind of what you make it.
Yeah, and I mean, you're absolutely right there with making it as expensive as you want, because, you know, for me and my level of fly fishing that, you know, where I'm at, I guess, I couldn't tell you the difference between like, you know, a high-end Winston or a Sage, or, you know, something from like Cabela's that came in like a pack of, you know, rod, reel, line, everything all, you know, ready to fish out the door. You know, I think a lot of people are probably in that boat, right? And yeah, for, you know, $150, you can be, you know, ready to walk out into the river at any given time. And I think that that's certainly important for people who are just getting into it.
Totally. Yeah. And I love that there's more and more companies that are creating really solid entry level gear for people, because, you know, most people don't want to just drop a couple grand right out of the gate. They'd rather just kind of test the waters and try it out. But yeah, I'm the same way. I'm not really a gearhead. So, you know, I've been slowly learning over time, but you couldn't ask me to detect those little minute differences that so many people can detect.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, Lindsay, before I let you go, where can people find you at and learn more about Fluent Movement on the Fly and your weight and wellness retreats?
You know, my website's probably the best spot, and it's just my first and last name, www.lindsaykoschka.com. I send out a newsletter, so you can sign up for a newsletter there. It's relatively infrequent. I usually send it out like once a month, and you know, I'll share events that are coming up, but then I'll also share different resources, education resources, conservation resources, just throw out some information that I think is useful to the community as a whole. So website's number one. My my Instagram, I've just been rolling with my personal Instagram for the time being, just because I feel like it's a pretty good reflection of everything that I've been doing with guiding and the retreats and the Fluent Movement on the Fly classes. So Instagram handle is just Lindsay Kochka. And then Fluent Movement on the Fly also has a Facebook page. So it's just Fluent Movement on the Fly.
Awesome. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed hearing more about your journey, you know, what you're trying to accomplish with Fluent Movement on the Fly and your retreats. I think it's great getting people involved and helping them feel more empowered and more comfortable when they are in the outdoors. Because like you said, ultimately, you know, the more empowered they feel, the more they're going to enjoy themselves. And, you know, getting outdoors in any capacity, you know, enjoying it is really what it's all about.
Yeah, well, it was my pleasure. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
Yeah. And if I get out to Bozeman, I will be sure to have you point me in the right direction, or we can hit up the river sometime.
Sounds great. I'll be here.
All right. Take care, Lindsay.
You too.
All right. Well, thank you again to Lindsay for taking some time to sit down and chat with me today. I would also like to thank the partners of the podcast, Wild Rivers Coffee and Stone Glacier, as well as 2% for Conservation. And if you're interested in learning more about 2% for Conservation, you can visit their website, fishandwildlife.org. And there you can see all the certified brands that have committed to conservation that you should support when you shop. I also encourage you guys to give 2% a follow on social media, where it's going to be only positive conservation focused posts that you see in your feeds. So again, if you'd like to learn more about 2% for Conservation, you can look for them online on social media or at fishandwildlife.org. Thanks for tuning in this week, everyone. Be sure to check out theaverageconservationist.com and catch up on all the latest podcast episodes, as well as grab some gear and help support conservation in the process. So until next week, stay safe out there, and remember that conservation starts with you.